9th and open a work session. A public hearing, sorry.
Let's do this first.
Which one?
This one first.
Okay, work session for introduction of committee measure. Open a work session for introduction of committee measures.
Madam Chair, I move LC 4073 be introduced as a committee measure.
Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved LC 4073 be introduced as committee measure. Any discussion?
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LC 4073 requires covered entities to file a donor identification list that identifies donors that made donations of $1,000 or more to a covered entity. If covered entity makes aggregate contributions, aggregate independent expenditures, aggregate covered transfers, or aggregate educational expenditures as specified amounts, it permits covered entities to establish separate campaign account, regulates covered entities' transfer of monies from non-campaign accounts to separate campaign account, requires commercial advertisers to maintain books of account specificity, contract information and services provided for political advertisements. It establishes civil penalty for failure to comply with covered entity disclosure requirements and commercial advertiser reporting requirements.
And who is the covered entity? Well, how's that defined?
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, covered entity as defined in the LC means labor union, for-profit corporation, nonprofit corporation, company, incorporated or unincorporated association, general or limited partnership, society, joint stock company, or any other organization or institution.
All right, thank you.
Representative Nos, Representative, could you please come up here because we're taking a vote?
I will.
Thank you. Any discussion, other discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, I just haven't read it, so
okay.
As consistent with your policy on these votes, my vote today to support your decision to introduce this as a committee bill certainly in no way goes to the substance of the bill, which I may oppose.
That's fair. Vote today to introduce the measure does not connote support of the actual bill when it comes to a vote. Any objections? If not, the LC is introduced, close work session, open a public hearing only, on House Bill 2478. Erin, will you describe the measure? Now you're.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2478 makes statutory changes to achieve general neutral language with respect to legally recognized marriages. You have a -1 amendment. It does replace gender-specific references to spousal relationships, husband and wife in statute with gender neutral references to spouses married to each other. It removes from measure changes to statutes related to parent and child rights and relationships. There is a no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact issued on the -1.
Representative Nos.
Thank you. Chair Hoyle and Vice Chair Smith Warner, thank you for the opportunity to sit across from you this afternoon and testify on House Bill 2478. House Bill 2478 is a technical bill in that it updates and modernizes Oregon's marriage statutes to reflect what we now recognize, which is the legal ability to marry for all loving, committed couples, including those that are gay and lesbian. Most of you know that last year, a federal court injunction barred the state of Oregon from denying the rights and responsibilities of marriage to same-gender couples like myself and my husband, Jim. And in other words, Oregon joined 36 other states and the District of Columbia and recognized the freedom to marry the person you love, regardless of their gender. House Bill 2478 replaces the phrase husband and wife with the words spouses in a marriage throughout the Oregon statutes. The legislation does this for 54 pages and 67 sections. It addresses statutes that deal with real property, tax and estate, civil rights in reference to marriage, parental obligations, and even the dissolution of a marriage. You know, as I thought about what to say, I think there are many ways that I could have gone with this bill. And maybe I am underplaying it a little bit by saying that this is a technical bill, because clearly there's been a sea change on this issue and one that I did not expect to see in my lifetime. I certainly never expected to be back in the early 90s when Jim and I started dating to be able to legally marry him someday. I didn't expect in 1996 when we bought our house, the one we still live in, nor did I expect it when we adopted our kids in the year 2000. In fact, we paid a lawyer and prepared a lot of extensive paperwork to deal with all sorts of things related to children and power of attorney in case of bad health, because there were no marriage statutes in place that provided for those legal protections. I didn't even think I could anticipate the ability to legally marry when the state passed non-discrimination and domestic partnership statutes for gays and lesbians back in the year 2007. I guess I don't think that Jim and I are that different from many Oregonians. In fact, aside from being two men, I don't think we're that special at all. We are very normal and very boring. We've been in a loving relationship for over 20 years. We own a home. We pay our taxes even more now that we're legally married. We are decent neighbors. We have two kids that we adopted, and they're now teenagers. And we're trying hard to keep up with our kids in their busier and busier lives with sports and school, their boyfriends and girlfriends. My kids will tell you that we're very boring. We try to get them to go to sleep on time, turn off their cell phones, do their homework, and eat less junk food. My husband and I bicker about how I don't load the dishwasher correctly, and how he and I think that he should just be grateful that I load it at all, given the poor training that I've received in all these 20 years of our relationship. It's the same argument that we've been having. You know, he's too critical and I'm too sensitive. So maybe this seems like something special, since until recently the ability to marry for two men who are in love or two women who are in love did not exist. But I guess as special and foundational as this right is, I want to assure you that Jim and I are really all not that special, and hopefully House Bill 2478 is not that special either. And with that, I hope you will pass this bill.
Any questions? Yes, Representative McLean.
Representative Nose, if the Supreme Court overturns the lower court's interpretation of the Equal Protection Clause, the case that was decided by Judge McShane is later challenged because the Supreme Court has been clear as to the Equal Protection Clause. Would this bill, House Bill 2478, if Judge McShane's decision was changed, have the effect of changing what is a marriage in Oregon, given the people's decision under the ballot measure? I can't remember the 36.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, I am not prepared to give you an answer on that, but I believe there are people that are signed up who are lawyers who can give you an answer on that question. I'm not trying to dodge. I really don't know.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the amendment, which I haven't seen until this meeting. I'm on page 10. All of the changes that I have seen so far simply change the words from man or woman to spouse, or husband or wife to spouse. There are a couple of obviously stylistic changes that don't change anything. Are there any other kinds of changes in this amendment other than the kind I'm looking at that I've seen so far?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, my understanding is that there are not any other changes, though I'm sure I'll be corrected by somebody that comes up here next if I'm wrong. I did a perusal of the bill myself, and like I said, it's a bunch of pages, and it's like 67 sections, and I didn't notice any other change except for going from husband and wife to spouses. And you could argue it's just gender neutral. It's more progressive. It's not necessarily, you know, gay and lesbian per se, though I think that's clearly part of the intent.
Thank you. And if I could just simply comment, Madam Chair, it is kind of amazing in a way that, although maybe not amazing, that the marriage state is referred to in so many different statutes, as illustrated in the bill and in the amendment. I have another question, if I may.
Yes, one more.
On the other bill on the agenda that is not open, 3231, that does some similar things, but it's on a different topic, isn't it? These don't overlap very much, do they?
I believe that, Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I believe you are correct. I think that one's about adoption.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could just ask staff for a moment to comment on the dash ones as opposed to the original bill. What are the changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, in fact, I would defer to the Department of Administrative Services, Barry Pack. He drafted that amendment in consultation, but he can walk through that for you.
All right, thank you. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to call up some people, unless there's other questions for the representative, call up some people that can answer the more technical questions. Thank you very much, Representative. With that, I am going to call up Barry Pack, Gina Frizzini, and Mark Johnson Roberts. Yourself, why don't you start, identify yourself for the record. We'll go through, give brief testimony, and then if there are questions, I think you're the people to answer them, are you not?
We hope so.
Yes.
Madam Chair, if I may, I'll start for the record. Members of the committee, Barry Pack, State's Deputy Chief Operating Officer at the Department of Administrative Services, and I think I will be able to answer some of the questions that have just come up, and I'll defer some of the legal questions to others. DAS did have this bill drafted. One of the roles that DAS plays conventionally in state government is to be the convener of agencies when we see policy or operational issues coming that will impact multiple agencies. And so when the federal case on Oregon's ban on same-sex marriages came before the courts, we brought agencies together that we anticipated would be most impacted by a potential decision that would overturn the ban to ask the question, what would happen next? What changes would have to take place in terms of policies, rules, or statutory changes that might ultimately need to take place, dependent upon, of course, how the court ruled? One of the things that became apparent to us in those conversations with the agencies is a lot of the operational issues had already been addressed through the development of Oregon's Registered Domestic Partnership Program. So a lot of the procedural pieces would have to get amended, but the operational questions weren't very dramatic. What was then also apparent, which I think Representative Barnhart alluded to, is Oregon's revised statutes are literally the references to marriage permeate throughout them, and there were just hundreds of statutory references that were specific to gender-specific definitions, husband and wife, man and woman married, things like that. And it became clear that if the court overturned the ban on same-sex marriage and people of the same gender were allowed to marry, ultimately the statutes would need to align with that reality. And consulted with counsel who advised that dependent upon the court's opinion, we would be able to rely on that opinion to execute some of the rule changes, but that the statutes could wait till we had some time to look into it. So DAS brought the agencies together to look at what changes might be necessary, and what we were focused on as an agency and as agencies in the executive branch was to look at instances where references to marriage could be made gender neutral and it would have no policy impact. It was purely an administrative change, and there would be no difference in reality other than what the court had already ordered. So there are many places where, as Representative Barnhart noted, we're simply changing the statute from husband to wife to spouses who are married or spouses in a marriage. That could apply to people of the same gender or people of the opposite gender. There'd be no change in the application of law based on the court's decision. There are places, however, where gender does matter. Paternity, for one example, is a gender-specific policy choice, and it applies various responsibilities and rights and benefits based on that. And so those were the areas that we wanted to avoid making changes because they would have policy impacts that perhaps had unintended consequences from an administrative perspective that we're not the experts on. So when we got this bill drafted, we utilized statutory references that were cited in the federal court case as our starting point for where you would find all these various points of reference, ask legislative counsel to look at it, add to it any sort of statutory cites that they saw were evident. And then that was the product of the printed bill that you have before you. When we reviewed it, we sent it out to agencies for feedback, and, you know, 90% of it met that administrative goal. There were no policy impacts being addressed. It was simply the switch of gender-specific language to gender-neutral language. The exception was around in the juvenile code and around paternity and parentage rights. And so part of the genesis of the Dash 1 is to remove those changes out so that they could be addressed individually in, I think, the bill that you will hear next. So our goal was to get this to be the purely administrative bill that has no policy change other than aligning the statutes to what the law, as the court has interpreted, applies now, and then allow for the legislature and policymakers to have other conversations in other vehicles.
Ms. Frazzini.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. My name is Gina Frazzini. I'm the co-executive director of Basic Rights Oregon, and we work to ensure that all lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Oregonians truly experience equality here in this state we call home. As you've heard, we're talking about the fact that nearly 1 year ago, on May 19th of 2014, we have a federal district court ruling from Judge McShane that gay and lesbian couples in Oregon have the right and the freedom to marry. And there's been, in that short time, so much love, so much joy, and so many happy families. As Representative Nose noted, Oregon now is joined with the District of Columbia and 36 other states that recognize marriage between two loving individuals, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, and has been true for other states that have extended the freedom to marry for same-sex couples. Oregon now must update and modernize its marriage statutes to reflect that reality. As many other states before us have recognized and contended with, we have a discrepancy between the recognized law and, in fact, the reality of now hundreds, if not thousands, of legally married same-sex couples in this state, and outdated language in our statutes that still reflects a marriage as only between a husband and a wife. So with the updates in House Bill 2478, and the way that modernizes our marriage statutes, we have the opportunity to fix that discrepancy and reflect the reality in Oregon that includes same-sex couples. So it may sound dry, especially as Barry talks about the goal. no offense, Barry, but being strictly an administrative update to the statutes, it may sound dry, but the bill has real positive effects for families. For example, it'll help ensure fair employment practices by clarifying that married spouses, regardless of their gender, are recognized as the legal and rightful beneficiaries should their spouse become injured on the job. It also will update language for funeral home directors, allowing same-sex partners to make decisions related to the burial of their loved ones. That's actually an issue that we hear a great deal about, is the interaction that folks have with funeral homes as they are mourning the loss of a beloved partner. We also hear quite a bit at our organization about folks as they purchase homes together and the ways in which the statutes that that regulate that industry have not caught up to the reality of our lives. So as Barry mentioned, the Dash 1 amendments remove the items, the more policy-related items, specifically to parentage and into a bill solely dedicated to that topic that we'll be discussing shortly. They also, in the Dash 1 amendments, also update language related to marriage, stating that it's a civil contract between two individuals. This is an addition to the original draft as well. The bill is not only straightforward, but it's important. It's statutes, it brings needed clarity to ensure that our statutes reflect the law here in Oregon, and it affirms that we have, as a state, value freedom, including the freedom of each Oregonian to marry the person that they love. So I thank you for bringing forward this important bill and urge your support for House Bill 2478. And I'm happy to address the questions that have been raised so far at this point. Or
why don't we go through the panel quickly and then address questions? So, Mr. Johnson Roberts.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. My name is Mark Johnson Roberts. I have lived in Oregon for 33 years. For over 25 years, I have been a family law lawyer in private practice. I'm the former president of the Oregon State Bar, a former co-chair of the Oregon Gay and Lesbian Law Association, and a former chair of the State Professional Responsibility Board. Since 2006, I have been Oregon State Delegate to the American Bar Association. In December 2013, I was pleased and privileged to marry my partner of 32 years, Jay Roberts, although I had to do it in Vancouver, Washington, because at that time, marriage equality had not yet come to Oregon. Based upon my particular experience and expertise in LGBT family law, I strongly urge you to support House Bill 2478. This bill will help reflect Oregon families as they actually exist in the modern era by updating Oregon's statutes to create gender-neutral language. In sum, House Bill 2478 would amend Oregon's state marriage law to be a gender-neutral contract between two spouses and would amend other state statutes to reference marriage in gender-neutral manner. Specifically, the legislation will adjust statutes in the area of property, real property, taxes, and estates, civil rights statutes that refer to marital status. It will adjust statutes in the area of parental obligations, and it will adjust statutes with regard to dissolution of marriage. Most of my professional experience is in the dissolution of relationships, so that is the lens through which I view the problems that the denial of marriage equality has caused for my community. And frankly, those problems are legion. For same-sex couples, even the simple fact of whether the relationship exists or not must be proven through property titles and bank account statements and documents and the like, because there is no marriage certificate. The challenges continue with inadequate support arrangements because spousal support is not an available option for a court dissolving a non-marital relationship. And even where the parties are operating in good faith, the problems culminate with an inability to make a proper property division because the federal statutes that apply to retirement plans make no provision for unmarried couples. Let me give an example that will help clarify the kinds of challenges my clients face. Two women meet, they fall in love, they move in together, they have children, and they remain a couple for many years. When the children are born, they try to get both names on the birth certificates, but they are told that they can't do it without an adoption. That's actually not true anymore, but they do have to file a declaratory judgment proceeding. And to a lay person, of course, it amounts to the same thing. They have to hire a lawyer, spend a bunch of money. I'm not going to embarrass you by making you raise your hands, but I'll just ask you the question, how many of you have a will? And for those of you who have a will, how long it took you to write that will? And for those of you who don't have a will, how long you've been thinking you ought to have been writing that will? And you'll see the kind of problems that I confront in my practice every day. One partner works, the other partner stays home to raise the children. When the divorce comes, the partner who's not on the birth certificate cannot assert parental rights. The stay-at-home mom can't get Social Security on her partner's account, and she has no account of her own. Often the largest asset they own is the working partner's retirement plan, and that cannot be divided. We end up with a very expensive divorce, one that the non-working partner in particular cannot afford, and often an unsatisfactory outcome for all concerned. Chair Hoyle, at this point, I could address the question that Representative McLean raised about the McShane case, if you'd like me to do that.
By all means.
I'm sure that Judge McShane would prefer that it be called the Geiger case. that case, to clarify the sort of procedural posture, the United States Supreme Court has denied cert in that case. That case is not before the court. In fact, the court has denied cert uniformly in all of the cases that ruled in favor of marriage equality. They have taken review, and I believe it's three cases from three circuits or two circuits, where the ruling was against marriage equality, where the cases were lost. Those are the cases that the court has taken, and the question is, will they affirm that decision or will they reverse it? If they were to affirm the decision, it's my understanding that Judge McShane's injunction would remain in place until such time as the state of Oregon, acting through the governor or the attorney general, presumably would petition Judge McShane to lift that injunction. How and when and whether that would happen is a policy question that's beyond the scope of my knowledge. But one thing I do know is that the validity of marriages is determined at the time that they're formed. And so all of the thousands of people who have married during the interim, those marriages, the state would still be in a position of needing to regulate and deal with going on into the future, even if the injunction were to be lifted. Is that helpful in answering your question?
It is helpful. I understand that the order is final, but I just got a copy of the dash one, page six, section seven. It changes the definition of marriage. That if this law were to pass, that would still be enacted even if the injunction would lifted. So this would have the effect of changing the measure 36 vote of the people.
Correct. If the injunction, Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean, if the injunction were lifted, just to be brutally honest about it, the constitutional provision in the Oregon Constitution would come into play and would supersede this statute, frankly. I mean, there would be an issue, as I understand it, and now we're drifting into areas that I'm really not very familiar with. The voters adopted at the last election an ERA amendment, and there would be a question about how those two dovetail with each other. But there'd be there would be some complicated constitutional litigation over the question, and the statute would be a bit player in that.
Wouldn't it be more prudent to do this bill in 2016 after we know what the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court is?
Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean, in my opinion, no. Again, there are thousands of marriages that will continue to exist going on into the future that the state will need to regulate.
But nevertheless, you would agree that a decision of the Supreme Court in affirming those decisions that are before it would have the effect of putting the ban by the District Court of Eugene into question, and therefore put marriage definition in Oregon into question.
I would agree with that, yes.
Madam Chair, I would just say, given that, I'm not sure as policymakers, us making the decision in 2015 before that decision of the U.S. Supreme Court is prudent. I would certainly recommend to my colleagues here that we wait until the Supreme Court tells us. I mean, certainly those, I think Judge McShane's interpretation was of a Supreme Court case based upon the Equal Protection Clause striking down the Defense of Marriage Act. I've said publicly that that was a logical extension of the act, and I think that probably is. But nevertheless, we still have this question out here. I think it's an, again, I just want to go on the record. I think while this may be technical changes, and based on the testimony, it sounds to me like changes that the legislature probably should make and clean up this stuff. I do a lot of estate planning for the Air National Guard because I have to do wills and powers of attorneys and stuff by the hundreds. But so I know the complication you speak of. But it seems to me that this is premature until we have a final say on the Equal Protection Clause.
Representative Wilson, then Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Barry, question for you. And aside from these two bills that we're looking at today, when we look at scrubbing law to achieve gender neutrality, how much is left out there beyond what we see here with these two?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, that's a very good question. It's hard to know. We took a stab at the stuff that was most evident, again, based off of what was cited in the court arguments. I believe legislative counsel found other references that met our criteria of generally being administrative changes, so there wasn't a policy impact. But, you know, even legislative counsel doesn't really have the ability to go through an exhaustive keyword search, effectively, of the ORSs to make sure that the linkages aren't there. So I cannot tell you that this is all-inclusive. I'm sure there's stuff that has been missed, and were the legislature to adopt this, I'm sure that will get identified by people over time. And so you may have to see additional stuff that, you know, that occurs fairly regularly as the legislature updates its statutes in some of these ways. There's just the interlinkages are many.
And one follow-up, please. Another question about the Constitution, Oregon's Constitution. Are there any gender changes that need to be made in the Oregon Constitution, any constitutional changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, we did not look at the Constitution, recognizing that that was a heavier lift. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if the court's decision stands post the Supreme Court ruling, you'll have some language in the Constitution that is unenforceable based on the court's decision, and you will have the option of considering that down the road, and if it's uplifted, then it won't.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to go back to something that Representative Nose had said in his testimony, and just on the face of it, the idea of indeed replacing gender-specific with gender-neutral language and the utility of that overall, that there is, this is, you know, that is a kind of cleanup and adaptation that we, you know, have and I think will continue to do in statute. And so I'm not sure if it's really a question, but I guess I just wanted to say for the record that I think there is a utility. I think there is a significant importance. I think there is a value in that. So, sorry, couldn't make that into a question in the end.
Well, it's a comment.
Well, yes, my concern is, and I'd say to Representative Smith-Warner, on page 6 of the dash 1, you have a clear change of definition of marriage. Now, for us to vote on this, we're voting against the Constitution of the state of Oregon that we swore not to uphold. Now, that provision was struck down, or at least there's been a ban put on, because the federal Constitution's Equal Protection Clause came in and overruled it. If it turns out that the Equal Protection Clause was misinterpreted by Judge McShane, and again, I think he made a logical conclusion, extension of the Defense of Marriage Act striking down. So I'm not saying his reasoning was flawed in that regard, but I'm saying if it turns out that the Supreme Court says Equal Protection Clause does not render the Oregon Constitution null, then what we're being asked, not on the cleanup stuff, and this specific, a change of 106.010, is to basically vote on a statute which is in clear violation of our Constitution at that point. So, again, you know, I'm a stickler for the process, and I think the process is that we've got a federal court decision from the District of Oregon in Eugene by Judge McShane that, again, I think was a logical extension of prior Supreme Court ruling, but nevertheless, it's at question until this term of the Supreme Court is over. And once we know, it'll be June 30th, then we'll know what the Equal Protection Clause says with regards to same-sex marriage. And then Section 7 of the dash 1 will be clear. Otherwise, this bill would be requiring us to vote on something when we know doggone well that the Supreme Court is deciding whether the federal Constitution trumps that provision of the state Constitution. And I'm just talking about the process, and it seems to me that the process would merit us to find out before we go in and change it. The rest of this stuff, as I've thumbed through it, I haven't had time to go through it, but as I'm thumbing through it, it's seems to be innocuous. I mean, we're just... I look at it as just word changing that seems to be consistent. But that one provision right there changes the definition of marriage statutorily. That's why I'm bringing it up. I mean, you know, I think we all have a respect of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on equal protection, regardless of what we politically view. That's the process. Three branches, they're going to tell us what the Equal Protection Clause says. What they say is final.
Anybody else? Any other questions for anyone? Any comments to these questions from the panel?
I'd like to just comment briefly, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. I think my final comment, Mark covered essentially most of the legal issues at play here. We do have a lot of what Mark talked about in writing in testimony from the ACLU of Oregon, and I think, In terms of the timing question that Representative McLean is raising, there are a lot of unanswered questions about what the scope of the ruling from the Supreme Court will be, what the impacts on Oregon will be, and so forth. I think a couple of things that we do feel very confident about. One is that Oregon's decision is very unique and specifically tailored to the facts and circumstances in Oregon. We have inconsistencies in state policy between Measure 36, for instance, and the Oregon Family Fairness Act that are referenced in that decision. We were the first state of 19 rulings that was where the decision was not stayed and that the marriages moved forward. So we've already seen the way in which our unique circumstances in Oregon look very different from what's happened in other states. And this piece around the fact that there are thousands of married couples who are of the same sex who are literally absent from the statutes as they currently are structured, so that the definitional piece that you're talking about, which is also aimed at gender neutrality around clarifying that marriage is a civil contract between two individuals with a gender-neutral approach there, this would be appropriate even in an instance down the road where we were under a Measure 36 ban for same-sex couples as well.
You know, may I, Ben? I'm not sure I agree, because I don't think this is consistent with Measure 36. And but nevertheless, you know, you're very focused and have, you know, I saw this an hour ago. So, you know, I'm open to here in Country View, but as I glance on it, I think it actually changes the definition of marriage in Oregon to be consistent with Judge McShane's decision, which is our process. But the process of this, in light of what the Supreme Court may rule, and, you know, by their tradition, they're going to rule by the end of June. That's next month. I mean, shouldn't we just, I mean, look at the cases under review. I mean, they're going to tell us what the Equal Protection Clause has to say, and specifically how we should view the declaration of the constitutionality or unconstitutionality of Defense of Marriage Act. So in Judge McShane's decision rolls out of that interpretation of the Equal Protection Clause. So again, you know, I'm bothered by the fact, because if they come out consistent with their prior ruling on DOMA, they should tell us that Equal Protection Clause strikes down distinction between the sexes with regards to legality of marriage, which is what I think most people expect. But if they don't, then the ruling by Judge McShane will be immediately put in doubt. And this statute, if we change it now, will be, I think, in violation of the Oregon Constitution and the vote of the people in that regard. And I got to tell you, I'm just thinking, why wouldn't we pause and just wait to get that opinion and then run it? I don't know. I'll tell you one thing. I think it's an interesting proposition from the standpoint of, you know, what if they don't, they're going to throw the states into significant administrative challenges when you have a gap like that, or an interim period where what was once illegal is now legal or legal, and then later on, if it's deemed to be illegal before a formal change of the Oregon Constitution, you're going to have a problem that it won't be fun for anybody. I acknowledge that. I just bring this up because I think this does change Measure 36, and I'm thinking, why do that now? Let's just wait to June 30th.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Madam Chair, given the explanation that we've just heard of the status of the case in Oregon, I don't see any problem with this bill going forward. The law in Oregon is clear, based on the ruling, and the fact that it's a final judgment, and I see no there's no difficulty. And certainly no violation of oaths for us to go forward with the bill based on the fact that the current law is what Judge McShane said it is in his ruling. The fact that it might change at some later time is irrelevant to whether or not we can act.
Any other comments, questions for this panel?
Oh.
Representative McClain.
Representative Barnhart is correct. There's a final judgment. But let's not ignore the fact that we have less than 2 months. The end of next month, we're going to know for sure. And to put this through now, given what Section 7 says in the dash one, would seem to me to be a process flaw, and that we're going to then what? I mean, we're going to take a vote that seems to be super clear once we know if the Equal Protection Clause is affirmed with regard to how Judge McShane ruled. But I certainly agree with Representative Barnhart. It is a final judgment. I'm just surprised, given this session, why would this would try to be rushed through before the final ruling.
Any other comments, questions? With that, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. I will call up Rebecca Roth and Janice Deisinger. Ms. Deisinger, would you like to go first, please?
Chair Hoyle and members of the committee, I wanted to say I was very interested in the Supreme Court.
Oh, just please identify yourself.
I'm Janice Deisinger. Thank you. I was very interested in the Supreme Court taking on this case, and I thought they raised some very important questions. I believe it was Chief Justice Roberts that said that one of the questions they were looking at was not that people were not asking to join the Institute of Marriage, but rather they were redefining what marriage was. And also they were considering the religious liberties issues as well. And these issues are very weighty on our society. I came down here, I drove here today to say I just think it's premature for us to consider this issue, as Representative McClain has very well spoken, much better than I could ever come up with. And so I would just like to say I very much agree with him and would ask you to please wait if you want to consider this. Please do it after the ruling comes down. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Ms. Roth.
Rebecca Roth, Salem, Oregon. I'm asking you not to do this at all, because the redefinition of marriage is casting Christian people who have objection to being in ceremonies that are against their conscience. It's casting them as criminal people who get fined and are being terrorized by the state, and also by individual homosexual people. They've had death threats. They've been driven out of business. When other Christian people went to try to help them with a GoFundMe account, the homosexuals came and terrorized the GoFundMe until finally they closed down the account. And this redefinition of marriage is being forced upon us. The judge suddenly found it unconstitutional. When we went and put that on the ballot and collected signatures, we did it legally. We went through a judge. He found it constitutional. We had a good vote. We had a lot of people support it. And then all of a sudden, it struck down. Now all of a sudden, we have normal people are suddenly considered to be criminals. And that this takes me back to what I have a book here that was thankfully put together by a great patriot who was a lieutenant colonel. He's retired now. But this is a book of speeches given by communists, both in Russia and here, who express in their speeches the desire to destroy marriage.
Excuse me, Ms. Ross, I need you to speak to the bill.
I am.
And stay focused on the bill.
They desire to destroy marriage, and they've been doing it for years and years, and they are casting Christians as the ones who get terrorized by the government. And there's another group that if we're going to go with a definition of marriage that's based on love, there's a group that's called the North American Man-Boy Love Association, which wants
Roth,
to change
the definition of marriage even further. Ms. Roth,
I am going to call you out of order.
If you would like to speak,
They want to make it so that children can be attacked and the state will not.
Your testimony, we are done. Thank you very much.
Will not protect them.
I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 2478. Thank you very much. Okay, I will open a public hearing.
I don't like to hear from citizens.
This has become
a communist territory where you rule against the citizens of Oregon. Where you cause us to be the ones who
are the criminals. Thank you, Ms. Roth. Thank you very much. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3231 on parentage. Erin, will you please describe the measure?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3231 modifies laws regarding establishment of parentage of child. This measure comes to you from your Judiciary Committee with a due pass recommendation. We have a no revenue impact. We are awaiting a final fiscal impact on the measure. One did come with the measure, but it was just to move it this way.
Representative Williamson, would you care to testify to the bill? Please keep your comments to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just left Judiciary. It feels very similar. House Bill 3231 actually came out of the work group from the other bill you heard today, 2758. And as the work group worked on that bill, we realized that there was issues around language about parenting. So this bill updates to gender-neutral parentage language to reflect our modern families in Oregon. And the work group realized that in some cases, gendered language matters, and in some cases, it doesn't. So the Dash 2 amendments are being drafted and will be available shortly, and they reflect where gender differences matter. So this work group was health statistics, support enforcement, child welfare, judicial department, Department of Justice, and attorneys in the community, and some organizations who you'll be hearing from today. I think it's a very simple bill.
Madam Chair?
That's
yes, very
Representative
Kenema. Simple in concept.
Representative Kenema.
Yeah. So is it accurate to say then that the Dash 2s are a gotten stuff of the bill or just a tweaking?
I was going to say, that's what I thought. But
so how are we going to have a discussion if we don't have the amendments before us would be my question to the chair.
I think that's a fair question.
Fair question. And I hope that work group members will be able to adequately explain the Dash 2s.
I'd like to have the advantage of seeing the language, if I may.
I think that that's actually a fair request.
Because otherwise we're going to be discussing opinions and possibilities, and we can get way off course, and you just gave an admonition, let's talk about the specifics of the bill, and we do not have the specifics of the bill before us.
I have to...
Could I inquire?
Yes, Representative Bonhart.
Are there big changes? The Dash 2 make big changes?
Yeah, they make some, they so, make some
well, then
big changes.
I probably agree with the representative.
With that, given that it is a fair request from the committee members that since there are changes, that we should have the language in front of us. There are serious issues that we're considering in this committee, and so I will have to defer to the members of my committee and say that we will postpone this hearing for when we have the language in front of us. So
thank you, Madam
I want to
Chair.
Thank you for your time. I want to thank everybody that is here. But
the hope is that we'll have them later this week. The hope is that we would have them today.
Fantastic. With that, I will close public hearing on House Bill 3231.
And let me just make
An announcement.
And just committee members, I just want to remind you that we are meeting this Friday. We have posted an agenda. I know it's unusual, so I just want to put that reminder out there for everybody to make sure we are here at 3 o'clock on Friday the 8th.
Okay. With that, thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.